Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm John Hare, pinch hitting today for our host and founder, Charles Showalter, and happy to be here and happy that we have sponsors like the IUOE Local 66. That's the International Union of Operating Engineers here in Pittsburgh. We also have the American Federation of Government Employees, that's the national organization, underwriting our efforts and outreach to working families all around the country. You know, you can listen to us on the radio in 30 different stations across the country, and you can tune in or go to www.theunionedge.com and download our programs or listen live if you have a smartphone. So we hope you do. We hope you are. And I'm happy to be here and also happy to talk to a friend that I've met before and a wonderful labor educator and economic justice trainer. We are talking with Mark McDermott. Mark, are you out in Oregon today?
I'm in Seattle today.
Oh, he's in Seattle. Okay. And
my home base.
Right, of course. And what are the subjects that are on your mind today, Mark?
Well, I want to talk about the concept of an injury to all, Charlottesville, Virginia, and statues.
Been in the news quite a bit.
So let me lay this out. Obviously, Charlottesville has been in the news a great deal. The statue that they were talking about was erected in 1924, which was 59 years after the Civil War. And the question is why was it put up in 1924? What was going on? Well, across the country in the previous 30 years, over 3,000 African Americans had been lynched, that is, death by hanging, shooting, or burning, or all of the above, in the 30 years before this statue went up. And less than 1% of the perpetrators were indicted and convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't really understand what this looked like in real terms, I'm reading from the June 26, 1919, Jacksonville, Mississippi Daily News. And this is their lead headline. John Hartfield will be lynched by Ellisville mob at 5 o'clock this afternoon.
This is headlines.
This is the headline of the largest newspaper in Mississippi. It says John Hartfield, who is the man in question. Then it says the police officers have agreed to turn him over to the people of the city at 4 o'clock this afternoon, when it is expected he will be burned. When Governor Bilbo was shown the above dispatch and asked what action, if any, he intended to take to prevent the affair, he said, "I am powerless to prevent it. We have guns for the state militia, but not men. It is impossible to send troops to the scene for the obvious reason that we have no troops." Now, the troops that they're referring to are the National Guard, who are a military unit.
Mm-hmm.
And when soldiers are given lawful orders, they are required to carry them out, or else they are subject to extreme discipline. Nothing was done to any of the soldiers who allegedly refused to go and rescue this man from a certain murder that was known about ahead of time and was publicized. The collusion and cooperation of elected officials and police were a fundamental part of these thousands of crimes against humanity.
And that's the environment we're talking about when the statue gets erected.
That's right. And so this is obviously extraordinarily disturbing to millions of people in the country. So there's an attempt to pass a federal anti-lynching bill in Congress, which is killed in December of 1922. And the legislation was specifically intended to punish state and local government officials who failed to protect people and their lives from mobs, and then would punish the perpetrators of the crimes, and then fine the governments that failed to defend them. The legislation is killed.
Hmm.
In 1924, the year the statute went up, the Democratic Convention in New York City was unable to pass a platform plank denouncing the Ku Klux Klan. So that statue went up in the midst of this long history of extreme and illegal violence against African Americans. So why would they choose to put a statue up in 1924 when that was going on? It was to intimidate and terrorize African Americans. And there's an old labor saying, an injury to one is an injury to all, regardless of your race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation, immigration status. And these people who were being killed were also workers. And that when you have symbols like that that continue to stand and people lie about the history that drove these statues to be put up, is to continue to break our country apart rather than build unity and say what was done in the past was profoundly wrong. We apologize and we're committed to fighting hate and extremism today. This is where that statue came from.
And you have the newspaper to quote right there.
Yes, yes.
How easy to forget, right? To forget the reality of those situations.
Well, it's our country has a, there's a conscious effort on the part of many to keep this history from us so that we don't know. If you never heard about it, it's hard to forget.
Right.
Or it's easy to forget because you never knew. And to show you how this fight continues to today, there is a 52-foot statue in Birmingham, Alabama, which is a majority black city, to the Confederate soldiers and sailors, which was erected 40 years after the Civil War. And activists in Birmingham said, we would like this statue taken down because of the long history of racism and violence against African Americans. And as soon as this movement began, the Alabama legislature and governor quickly moved to make it illegal for cities to remove or alter historical monuments more than 40 years old without the approval of the state.
State presumption, preemption.
Yeah. Yeah, literally state preemption that says even though this is on city property, the city can't decide what it wants to do with its property without the approval of the state. These are the same people who talk about we believe in local control.
Yeah.
We don't want outside interference. Six states have now passed one of these laws, including Virginia. Now, it's truly appalling that legislators have to spend decide to spend their time on issues like these. But let's tie this to minimum wage and poverty.
Right.
Birmingham, which I said is a majority black city, passed a $10.10 an hour minimum wage, hoping to raise the wages for tens of thousands of low-wage workers in Birmingham. It took the state legislature and governor in Alabama 2 days to pass a law making it illegal for any city or county in Alabama to raise the minimum wage higher than the federal minimum wage because the state of Alabama has no state minimum wage.
Yeah, we had one of those in Pennsylvania too. The state preemption of minimum wage and other things. Mark, we're going to take a break and we're going to pick up again right after we hear from a few of our messages. So hang on. You've been listening to Mark McDermott, economic justice and labor educator, fascinating stories that are all still too real today. You're listening to The Union Edge. We'll be back in several moments.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone who
had to be independent and take initiative, and that's how I handle every project I get.
Discover new ways to develop great talent at gradsoflife.org, brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLetsDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm John Hare, pinch hitting today for our host and founder, Charles Showalter, and pleased to be in the middle of a very interesting discussion with our friend Mark McDermott, an economic justice and labor educator, speaking to us from the great state of Washington. Mark, we were talking about the origin of these statues that are been the subject in the news recently, and we've learned a pretty shocking history that they have as part of the Jim Crow South. So we were just speaking about how they were politically reinforced in some of the states through a law that we call state preemption. That is, the states say that there has to be state approval for the actions that the locals would take, like removing the statues, and how they've used the state preemption on other things today, such as localities setting their own minimum wage or higher minimum wage than federal or state standards. It's pretty, it's reminiscent of an earlier time, but it's strange how things come around.
Well, clearly the Trump regime and their white supremacist and neo-Nazi and Ku Klux Klan and other types are rallying around this white nationalism and trying to stir up racial hostility and racial tension as a way to divide working people and to advance their political agenda. And as a white man, I can never know what it is like to be a person of color in the United States. It is impossible for me to know that. But when I think about what it must be like to live in cities and states where these statues exist, and thinking they're murdering us in cold blood with lynchings, the police and the governors and the mayors are cooperating and colluding in doing this. They're blocking federal legislation to make this a federal crime. They've taken the right to vote away from us, and now they're putting up a statue to celebrate a glorious past of which all of this is part and parcel of the same type of racism, white supremacy, and white domination. I can't even imagine what that is like. And I think it's important for us, those of us who are white, to try and understand better why there is this frustration and anger in wanting these type of symbols removed. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to our children and our grandchildren to tell them the true stories of what these are about, and not only saying never again, but to say these type of symbols should be taken down and perhaps put in museums somewhere, but not be out in public. You might want to put up statues about the lynchings that occurred so that people could go, oh my God, that actually happened in our city? Yeah, it did. Nobody ever apologized. Nobody ever made it right. You can't go back and make it right. But if we're not going to become an increasingly polarized country, we have to reach out to each other and say, we are opposed to hate, we are opposed to bigotry, and we believe that everybody is our equal, everybody is our brother and sister. It's critical that we do this, or else we will become an ugly country. Can't go there.
And that's why I think the criticism of President Trump not being forthright by any means in terms of talking about the origin of these statues or talking about the reason why people might be angry at the statues or why they might be angry to have demonstrators come into their street in front of their house and parade around with torches and talk about white oppression and the great heroes that are represented in the statues. Our president certainly deserves much more of the criticism that he's already received, it seems to me, and others that would support it as well.
Absolutely. And you know, not only is it racist and white supremacist, but that torch-carrying mob, which brings back memories of lynchings and the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazis,
yeah,
were also chanting, "We will not be ruled by Jews."
Right.
I mean, this is straight out of Nazi Germany, of this kind of anti-Semitic bigotry.
This is fact, listeners. Mark is not making this up. That's what they were chanting.
Right. And really, we're dragging up this type of bigotry, too? I have a six-year-old grandson, and trying to explain to him, Grandpa, what is going on here? There's a lot of talking that needs to be done with our kids and our grandkids and in our community and say, love must trump hate. We cannot sit by idly. There were thousands of people the white supremacists came to Seattle. There were 100 of them, and we had several thousand people out protesting. They have a constitutional right to their point of view, but we have a constitutional right to go out and speak loudly and clearly. This kind of hatred and bigotry does not belong in our city, in our state, or in our country. No way, no day. This is a moment of moral truth, and to look at what is the content of our character as a people when this stuff is going on. We can't remain silent. It's deeply disturbing to me to see this.
And I believe many people around the country are deeply disturbed as well. I think the question is, how do we turn that anger and that shock about these events into some meaningful action that can help prevent it. I think the first thing is that we should applaud the mayors and the cities that have moved to begin to remove these symbols of racism and oppression, and acknowledge that that needs to happen everywhere they appear. And I think we need to also support the fact that our leaders, our elected leaders, have a responsibility to condemn in no uncertain terms these racist and bigoted actions and statements. What else do you think is positive action that neighborhoods or workers or unions can take to begin to counter this this uprising, a small as it is of this awful history of our country?
Let me give you a very concrete example. In 1886, a white mob that included many union leaders and union members, armed with guns, marched into our city's Chinatown and rounded up virtually every Chinese person in our city, marched them down to the docks at gunpoint and forced them on the ships and told them, never come back or we'll kill you.
Hmm.
This is the expulsion of the Chinese in Seattle in 1886. It was done in Tacoma, 30 miles south, a shameful part of our history. Labor had a role in that, a disgraceful part in it. 125 years later, the labor movement and our community allies, including Chinese American and other Asian Americans, did an apology march in which we reversed that march. We went down to the waterfront where the dock was formerly located, where they were forcibly loaded onto ships, and we marched the route backwards, that is, tracing the steps in every block, a speaker getting up and talking about, this was wrong, it's a shameful part of our history, we own it, and we pledge to work for racial unity and racial justice in the years moving forward. We can actually apologize for things that were done in the past, but more importantly, commit ourselves to building racial solidarity and more racial justice in our communities. That act reverberated through the Asian Pacific Islander communities out here when they saw the labor movement standing up and going, you know, we participated in something that was horribly wrong. We own it. We denounce it. And we say never again. And let's build a better community. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, that the labor movement here is getting stronger as we consciously work to build these ties. And so I say to my union brothers and sisters, white and persons of color, look for ways in which we can acknowledge the mistakes we made, pledge to never repeat them, and stand up and let it know that our multiracial, multicultural labor movement welcomes everybody, and we're going to stand with each other, because an injury to one is an injury to all, both today and into the future. Those are powerful symbolic statements, then followed up by actions in our communities to work together. I was on that march. It was virtually everybody had tears in their eyes. And I'm choked up as I talk about it now, remembering and seeing elderly Chinese people. Clearly, they weren't there.
Mark, that's really a wonderful message and a wonderful example for people around the country. We're going to have to wind down here, but perhaps you could tell our listeners a way that they could learn some more about what's going on out in Seattle and how about some of the labor and economic justice education and training sessions that are going on. How can they find out about that?
Go to my website, which is markmcdermott.com. That's www.markmcdermott.com.
Thank you, Mark. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. You've been listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.